I'm Cheryl Corley, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin returns next week. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. And sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, freelance editor Nick Charles, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in here and there, but for now, go ahead and take it away, Jimmy.
See love. Thanks so much. Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey,
Jimmy.
Good,
man. Great.
Okay, well, what's going on? Because I don't know. If I'm taking crazy pills, somebody has to tell me. Because I seem to recall there was some talk about Barack Obama. At first, he wasn't black enough, but now he's too black? What's up with that? Politico had a piece about his alleged dog whistle politics. Yo, see love. We got some tape, huh?
Absolutely. Now, this is Barack Obama before the inauguration when he showed up at Ben's Chili Bowl to get something to eat. And this is after he was served and they asked him if he wanted some change back. And he said,
No, we're straight.
That's right, we're straight.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that, CeeLo. So apparently his usage of African-American vernacular English is little beknownst to us, some kind of coding to black American people of color, mm-hmm. that it's kind of this virtual black fist and afro to let you know that he's down. The R, down. Take the first swing at this, man.
This is all news to me, Jim. You're telling me that Barack Obama is black, it turns out? When did this happen?
As it turns out, bro, and gray, according to the New York Times. It's
a little funny. I know he is turning gray. I don't blame him. I mean, if you read those daily briefings about terror warnings, your hair would turn gray and then fall out. So I'm with him on that. But it's kind of silly to read this set of stories put together by, let me just say it, a mostly white press corps in Washington that is sort of, you know, coming to this realization that, yes, in fact, we did elect a black president. And I think it's great that Obama says, you know, this at the Chili Bowl and he does the fist bump and whatever else and the way he walks, whatever. It's just, it's no big deal. It's not some sort of secret code. It's just who he is. What I am interested in is that this, again, Ivy League educated, mostly white Washington press corps is just sort of scratching their heads, figuring out that this guy is still, you know, though he be the president of the United States, he's still authentically black. And they're right. Trying to reconcile all that and figure that out. So let's hear it for diversifying the press corps. Get some folks in there who wouldn't be shocked by all this.
Mr. Nick Charles.
The thing that they need is, as Ruben said, they need more black folks in the audience when he gives these speeches so they can, you know, the white folks can turn to him and say, what did he say?
like on Sanford and Son, when exactly. It was like Hoppy and the black officer, you know,
exactly.
To translate.
Translate. What did he say? It reminds me of that wonderful piece in the first Airplane where these two black guys are talking and the nun has to translate for the rest of the folks. You know, it's really a non-issue, but it does point out the fact of how homogeneous the press corps has been and is, that he is, like them, Ivy League trained and very educated and to some extent an elitist, but he's also at some level a black man, and he's going to come out now and say, yeah, nah, we straight, we good. And they may not get it, but they better get it soon because he's going to be around for a while.
At some level, he on the surface level, absolutely, and probably deeper than that. A-Train, my man.
Number one, that's right, we straight. Number two, you know, well,
speaking of acting black,
it like that.
Slow down. Put down the haterade, Ruben. Number two, listen, if we're gonna, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, we talk about code words and dog whistle politics. You know, we forget that George W. Bush, you know, talked about crusades and culture of life, you know, to sort of reach out to his core constituency.
You mean evangelicals?
Evangelical Christians, mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, presidents have always used code words to get to their core demographic groups. And, you know, like Ruben has always said, we should, you know, have a same set of standards for everyone. Finally, on this whole, you know, swagger thing, you know, George Bush had the bow-legged cowboy swagger, you know.
Right.
Obama has the, you know, Michael Jordan hitting the last shot over Brian Russell in the 96 finals to win the game swagger. He has the swagger of a champion. He just walks like Michael Jordan. That's it.
Well, see, for me, not even. And jokes aside, just for a moment, it's troubling for me. And just for the record, I believe a sister wrote the piece of note on this Beyond the Politico piece. I believe a sister wrote the joint for the New York Times. But what's troubling for me is these pieces where it's as if we haven't been here for hundreds and hundreds of years, and white people are just now noticing that black people have distinct cultural markers. You know, we have a certain way that we like to function in the world. It's just disappointing to see stuff like this on the cover of the newspaper like it's news. Like, I remember when Barack gave his wife a pound, it was like it was international news, you know. And we've been doing this for years. We've been doing this since the 60s and before. It's really disturbing to be discovered in, like, this way, like we haven't been here.
It's like that thing with Mexicans. Latinos have been here for a long time, just like African Americans have been here for a long time. But it's almost like some folks figured they didn't have to figure us out because they were just hoping we'd go away.
Right.
It didn't quite work out that way.
Well, guys, you know that how people talk and what they say was a big thing in the news this week as well when we were talking about Republicans. Jimmy, you know, we had Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, man. Rush Limbaugh. What's up, man? It's like, you know, when you're Michael Steele and you're the RNC's man, and you find yourself apologizing to Rush Limbaugh, who essentially is just some cat on the radio. Dude, you failed. You failed. You just got punked. It's over. It's a wrap. You're the man.
Well, is he the man? This is Ruben.
Before you go on, let's listen to a clip of tape. This is Michael Steele on Saturday night on CNN's D.L. Hughley show. And this is what he had to say about Rush Limbaugh when he was asked about Limbaugh's comment that he wants to see President Obama fail.
Rush Limbaugh is an entertainer. Rush Limbaugh, his whole thing is entertainment. Yes, it's incendiary.
Right.
Yes,
and
it's ugly.
And this is what Rush Limbaugh had to say in response on his show on Monday.
Why do you claim you lead the Republican Party when you seem obsessed with seeing to it that President Obama succeeds?
You know something, Jimmy? This is Nick. You know, I'm with Ed Rollins, who was a long-time Republican strategist, who says, you know, basically they're fighting over who gets to steer the Titanic after it hit the iceberg. And the problem with that is that nobody really wants to take the helm. And Michael Steele should have stepped down last week, or he should step down now since he apologized. Because Rush Limbaugh has no legitimacy besides the pulpit of talk radio. And if people are going to follow
Hey, Rush, nothing wrong with talk radio, baby.
But if they're going to follow Rush Limbaugh like a bunch of lemmings off the cliff, let them do so. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, when Rush Limbaugh says that Michael Steele only wants to see President Obama succeeding, if President Obama succeeds, America succeeds. So my question is, where's Rush Limbaugh coming from? He wants to see the president fail so Americans can fail, so Americans can lose their homes because Americans can keep losing their jobs. Is that his attitude, that the worse we do, the better for the Republican Party? And that's the problem with the Republican Party. They don't have a strategy beyond, you know, something the negative. So it's not what we can offer to the alternative. Is if it fails, it's great for us.
All right, Ruben, my man, what's up with that?
Okay, two things going on here. First of all, you know, Limbaugh said that he hopes the Obama policies fail. He doesn't hope that the country fails. He doesn't hope that the country goes down the tubes. He hopes that the policies fail. For better or for worse, and we may disagree with him about this, he thinks that the idea of throwing all this money at the problem and another banking bailout is bad for the country and bad policy. Now, people can disagree about that. The other question is about Michael Steele. And I don't think he got in trouble for calling Rush an entertainer. He said he got in trouble for saying that he was incendiary and ugly. And I think that when you do that with somebody who has 20 million listeners who are also, many of them, conservative Republicans, and you're the head of the RNC, you're bound to have some sort of conflict. Lastly, you know, I don't understand what Michael Steele's doing on D.L. Hughley's show anyway. We talked earlier about Obama sort of being authentically black. I think Michael Steele is pretending to be black. You know, so much of what he has said, so much of the lingo that he's used has been sort of try to urbanize the RNC and try to somehow put forward this notion that this is not your father's Republican Party. But I'm not sure how much of that is authentic. He used a comment the other day about white bread. He said, we can't be so white bread. And then he's shocked somehow that white Republicans are upset at that. At some point, he's going to have to pick a lane. Does he want to be the head of the Republican Party, or does he want to try to urbanize and sort of pretend to be this is not your father's Republican Party? No, that's the problem.
Ruben's on to something. I'm sorry.
Guys, I'm going to quote from Rush Limbaugh from the CPAC conference here in Washington. Quote, "To us, bipartisanship is them being forced to agree with us after we have politically cleaned their clocks and beaten them." End quote. This is a man who has said that Michael J. Fox is, quote, exaggerating his Parkinson's disease. You know, this is the person who, you know, dresses up in black shirt and black coat like, you know, he's Vito Andolone Corleone and, you know, expects Michael Steele, you know, and I call Michael Steele out for saying one thing on D.L. Hughley and then going to kiss the Godfather's feet. It does send a disingenuous message about where the Republican Party stands. Ed Rollins was absolutely right in his CNN piece when he said Rush Limbaugh is not the Republican Party, and they're just going through an identity crisis right now.
If you are just joining us, I'm Cheryl Corley. You're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News, and we're in the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Nick Charles, Ruben Navarrete, and Arsalan Iftikhar. Back to you, Jimmy, but first, you know, we've been talking a lot about Rush Limbaugh, so listen to this.
But I've been getting so much encouragement. In fact, just before I went on, Rush Limbaugh called me up and said he wants me to fail. That was nice of him. That was nice of him, I thought.
Wow, man. It's so funny because, not funny, funny peculiar, that I just wish Jimmy Fallon was funny. You know what I mean? I wish he actually had his, he could actually write, and I wish he had comic timing. And, I mean, obviously, you know, he's somebody's nephew because he just got this gig.
So you don't think his debut worked, eh?
If he fails,
taking over Conan's show.
I don't know if it's Rush's fault.
Go ahead, A-Train.
The best part of the new Jimmy Fallon show is having The Roots as his house band.
That's
with
right.
Questlove and Black Thought. Mm. I mean, I think going from the whole, you know, David Letterman and Paul Schaefer, you know, Max Weinberg, and you know, to bring it to The Roots, to have them perform every night, I thought was gangster. And I added Black Thought as a friend on Facebook, so let's see if he accepts.
I mean, he has to have something to get you to watch his show. I mean, Jimmy, because he's not funny.
No, have I said that yet?
He's
not funny. And, you know, Arsalan, I'm with Arsalan 100% on this one. I love the Roots. Hopefully this won't dull their creative juices to be on that show every night. But Jimmy Fallon is, when the history of SNL is written, is not even going to be in the top 60% of the great SNL performers. And this guy is now the host of a major late-night show. You know, either he's somebody's nephew or he has photographs of somebody with a goat. Because I don't understand how he got the gig.
You know what's interesting? You know what's interesting about Conan O'Brien? But before we'd ever heard of him, you know, he was a comedy writer. He was a storied comedy writer. He's hilarious. You know, and we know his work.
He was a nobody.
Right.
He was a nobody.
Well, he wasn't nobody, but he's a funny nobody.
I'm with you. Conan O'Brien was a nobody who had been an accomplished comedy writer, but it hadn't been in front of the camera. And all of a sudden, he was thrown in to take David Letterman's place at midnight, you know, following the 11:30. And I think that a lot of people wrote him off and said, this guy's going to be gone in 13 weeks. This guy won't even make it. So it's you never know. But I got to jump on the Fallon thing with the Roots band and everything else. Again, this is the thread all afternoon long here. Everybody's trying to be black. I don't think.
Get this.
I think it's if you want a shortcut to just show how cool you are, then do this.
So Ruben, so really to be hip or to really go to the next level, we should have Los Tigres del Norte as the band.
No, that would be, I'd say the same thing.
You know, guys.
I would say the same thing. Just book who you want to book, you know? I mean, don't try to be something you're not, I guess.
It's marketing. It really just comes across like he's trying too hard in some ways.
Well, let me ask you guys, you know, Branford Marsalis was on The Tonight Show. I mean, isn't it the same sort of thing happening here?
I think it's a different thing. It's a different genre of music. And Branford was much more established. I think the band he brought, Kenny Kirkland, Jeff Tane Watts, and himself, was brilliant.
Right.
And they wanted a steady gig. This is the 90s when, you know, jazz musicians were making nothing. This is before Wynton, you know, took it to a different level with what he does here in New York. I don't think it's a bad thing to have the Roots as a band because I don't think anybody has complained about Max Weinberg's band being mostly white.
Another thing that happened this week, the comeback. Well, I don't know if you would call it a comeback, but there you go, Michael Jackson. So what's happening with that, Jimmy?
Yo, yeah, homeboy just committed to doing 10 dates at the O2 Stadium in London.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the stadium's getting a reputation for these kinds of big name concerts. Lionel Richie's doing a joint there, so you know it must be the hot spot, right? But you know, I mean, if it's not a cry for help, it's certainly a cry for money. I mean, I doubt that he's coming back for the love of it. I mean, look at him. You know, I mean, you got a 50-year-old up there popping and locking. You know, he's obviously doing it for money.
Well,
you know, so.
But Jimmy, that's unfair to say that when you have the Rolling Stones, who are 400 years
also
old,
also doing it for
piece.
Money.
Right. Exactly. they're at least the average age of the Rolling Stones is like 66 now or 65. Michael Jackson wants to come back at 50, and I won't pay to see him.
Well, listen, guys.
Man, look, I wasn't knocking him. If I could pop, lock, and drop. drop it somewhere for money. Get to get out these bills, man. I'd be there with my piece of cardboard and my Pumas on.
Jimmy, seriously. Jimmy, all I got to say is this album better be Thriller 2.0. You know, 750 million copies of Thriller sold around the world. I mean, I got six words for MJ. This is your last chance, homie. Like, this, if I don't hear at least 30% Black Michael on this album, I'm throwing the CD out.
There's no talk of a release, although we suspect that after he does these dates there will be some kind of release. Go ahead, Ruben.
Jimmy, I got four words for why Michael Jackson has to do the London deal. Gotta pay attorney fees.
True. Gotta be a smooth criminal on this one.
You got it, man. Look, leave me alone. You know, I can't help it if I wanted to. You're off the wall with it, man.
Oh, thank you.
But it might be time to beat it.
It does. It's time to beat it. It's time to beat it.
Somewhere out there, Michael Steele is taking notes on the lingo. I'm telling you now.
Ruben, you want to be starting something, man.
All right, guys. Jimmy Israel, a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV One Online, joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete, who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, joined us from San Diego. Nick Charles is a freelance editor. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney. And he joined us right here in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep.